Do you know where you are? You're in the jungle, baby. You're gonna...
Whoa, Jay, hold on. I'm sorry, but none of this movie takes place in the jungle.
Oh. Well... Do you know where you are? You're outside San Francisco, baby. And we just watched Return Fire Jungle Wolf 2 on
B-Movie Mania!
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania! And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and crazy Chris Hudson.
Welcome and hello to another exciting episode of B-Movie Mania. I'm your host this time around, Jason Hulls. And in the Jungle Wolf Pack this week, we have Paul Brooks.
Good evening. Hold on. Let me crack this open. There we go.
Nice. We have Mike Hayes.
Pew, 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 pew. Bang, bang. Pew.
And we have crazy Chris Hudson. Now, that sounds like the kind of enthusiasm that you get out of the main character of the movie we watched this time around. We watched Return Fire, Jungle Wolf 2. That's right.
Two.
We skipped the first one because, I just found Jungle Wolf 2 and I saw it on YouTube and I thought it was pretty funny.
I don't even actually think this is the second one.
No.
I think this is the third.
You actually do get the first film, Jungle Wolf. You kind of get like a brief version of that in the opening credits.
It is a little... See, yeah, I thought this was a bit Josh Kirby-ish.
A little bit.
The Jungle Wolf 2, like, is apparently like a three-part movie series where, like, the first part is those kids from school, and then, that whole part where they get kidnapped happens before it even jumps in. So, like, then it's confusing. And then it doesn't end. It's not resolved by the end. I'm feeling like I got Josh Kirby'd here.
I cannot handle this without some quick takes.
All right. Should I do a quick IMDb synopsis first?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Just to give people a sense of, because we don't want to Josh Kirby our listeners, right?
Mm-mm.
So I'm going to read the IMDb synopsis provided by Ivan Wong, and we thank you for that, Ivan.
Thanks, Ivan.
Steve Parrish, the marchster, referring to Ron Marchini, returns home to the San Francisco area after his many travails fighting in Central America. All he wants to do is see his young son, Zach. However, gang boss Petroli has it out for Parrish. He sends all the baldest, fattest, oldest goons after Parrish to exterminate him. But Parrish is one clever man. Somehow they manage to kidnap Zach, so Parrish teams up with his love interest, Terry, to fight the bad guys and save Zach. Shortly after that, he finds Zach, and they team up to take on the bad guys. Also, corrupt government agent Carruthers, Adam West, has his own stake in both the fates of Petroli and Parrish. So that's kind of just a nice little summary for you.
Can we just say that Adam West teamed up with Petroli? There's a lot of teaming up going on here.
You're right. Mike, I know where you're going. Sort of. Let's do quick takes.
Quick takes!
Chris, what was your quick take?
There's a lot of slightly uncomfortable killing. And by that, I mean that people who die seem mildly inconvenienced by their gunshot wounds. And about I was mildly inconvenienced by watching this movie. So, hey, I had a lot in common with the goons.
Okay. All right. Paul?
The Rockford Files called. They want their soundtrack back.
I have a feeling we're really going to get into the soundtrack. I hope we do.
Yeah.
It was pretty great, in my opinion.
It was fantastic.
It was great on the Rockford Files.
Oh, shit.
Mike?
I love me a good child warrior.
You know, I actually didn't consider the fact that you might gravitate toward the child warrior, but
hey, Dr.
I can
Otto,
see why
baby.
You'd say that. Yeah, yeah, I can see why you'd say that. All right, my quick take. B-movie maniacs in the jungle kill to survive. B-movie maniacs at home kill for a profit.
So true. So true.
Real poignant mm-hmm. part of that film, isn't it?
Yeah, so, you know, there's been some talk of fighting and killing and children here, so let's get into this. We open on a house with an old man named Jim. He's fixing a four-wheeler. And I think right off the bat, we get a little hint of what Child Warrior Zach is like.
Oh, yeah.
Would you agree, Mike?
Yeah, that kid sneaks up on old Jim and scares the shit out of him.
With the gun. And I believe yeah. Jim also has a gun, right? Like, they immediately both of them have guns.
Well, this is America, San Francisco, so obviously...
Of course.
Yeah.
We're going to have
every
that.
Time I work, every time I work on my car, changing the oil, listening to some tunes, cleaning it out, got my trusty sidearm.
Does Victor sneak up on you with a gun?
My kids sneak up on me constantly.
And do you say, what the hell?
What the hell?
What the hell?
So we kick into the opening credits that, I mean, is it safe to say just it's kind of looks like a B-movie Rambo kind of thing? Jungle
yeah,
Wolf 1.
Basically. But it's amazing because it kicks into the credits when the little child boy says, Jim, will my dad come home? And then cuts to like the back of our hero's head opening a sword he will never use again. Like, it's great.
Which I believe was the end of Jungle Wolf 1, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If so, I'd say the end of Jungle Wolf 1 has enough explosions to really give Hologram Man a run for its money. Mm.
There was a lot of action in this
movie.
I wouldn't say it's as high budget action as Hologram Man, but man, they really go for the speed in this movie.
That was cocaine, actually.
We see Steve complete his mission by getting an ambassador to a helicopter, and they leave him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, then he draws his sword, and the screen freezes, and it says...
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, Zach.
But can you imagine, let's say that just hypothetically speaking, you're a really big Ron Marchini fan or a...
Hypothetically?
Well, okay, you are a big Ron Marchini fan, and you're also a big fan of this franchise, right? So you've seen Jungle Wolf 1, you've seen Forgotten Warrior, and now you're really excited to find out how he's going to get back to San Francisco in Jungle Wolf 2. You're going right? to be sorely disappointed.
What happens, Paul?
He just shows up.
Yeah, because I believe he's surrounded by, like, guerrilla fighters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they have guns, and he just has a machete.
I have to say, without seeing Jungle Wolf 1, though, I mean, maybe that's the... Maybe the helicopter leaves Jungle Wolf in the jungle, like at the very beginning of that movie.
Well,
and the rest of the movie is him trying to get to San Francisco.
Could anyone find Jungle Wolf 1? I hunted everywhere. Yeah. I couldn't find it.
Yeah,
me,
you know,
didn't look.
Me and Mike were attempting to do some research. Attempting, I say.
Trying.
Because Mike tried to watch Jungle Wolf 1, and I tried to watch Forgotten Warrior, which is the first part. And I got mm-hmm. through about half of that. I found one version on YouTube, but apparently we couldn't find Jungle Warrior 1 anywhere.
Did you Which notice is... that in Forgotten Warrior, he's wearing the same yellow shirt that he wears
yes.
in Jungle Wolf 2?
Yes, he is.
If Makes you get sense. Ron Marchini in a yellow shirt, look out.
I really like that continuity.
Yeah,
yeah, it's his action shirt.
I was wondering if that's even the first movie, because the movie before that is Ninja Warriors, and he is credited as Steve.
Yeah, I really wonder.
They don't list the last name.
Yeah.
Steve Parrish?
Yeah. No, remember, Chris? Actually, Chris and I were chatting about this a little bit. In that movie, he's listed, it says Ron Marchini. Next to it, his character, it says Steve, but in parentheses, it says as Ron Marchini. So okay. It's Ron Marchini playing Steve, who is playing Ron Marchini.
And then we also might as well mention there is a Jungle Wolf 3, also starring Ron Marchini, but apparently playing a completely different character.
Hmm. A completely different Steve Parrish.
Yeah. So it's just all over the map.
It really is.
Before we really get into the plot here, I want to see what you guys think. I mean, were they really going for some sort of like Greek mythological kind of odyssey sort of feeling with the Jungle Wolf series? Because you've got, okay, so the Vietnam War is Steve Parrish's Trojan War, right? And so he wins the war and he's trying to get home and it takes him forever.
I mean, that's the impression I got. Yes.
Okay, good, good. I'm glad to know I'm not the only one.
Yeah, you know, that's a good film analysis there. That's
very nice, Chris.
That's good.
So he's on this boat in San Francisco Bay, and he has this voiceover that pretty much lays out everything. He's talking about too much pain, too many killings. I believe in that there's a insert shot of his girlfriend getting shot in the head in the jungle.
That will not be the only insert shot we see of his girlfriend.
No, no. And what weird places we see it too. And then he finally says, "Zach, I'm coming home," in a voiceover. So from this little bit, even just so far, do you guys kind of get what I said when I said, okay, it's kind of like if Neil Breen directed Taken?
Oh God, like, I got such a Neil Breen vibe from this movie. Like if Neil Breen made action movies in the 80s, this would be what he made.
Yeah. Marcini even kind of looks like Breen.
Yeah. Even like the delivery.
Sounds like him a little bit.
Yeah. So maybe that's one of the things I gravitated toward early.
Have any of us seen Marcini and Neil Breen in the same room at the same time?
No, maybe Jungle Wolf 4 is his move into real estate in Las Vegas.
I don't think Marcini's made a movie since Neil Breen started making movies.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cross-cutting here, because Zach is really into four-wheelers. So he's riding around, and Steve enters a mall.
Because he's going home because he wants to find his son. He can't wait to see his son, so he's going home.
To a mall.
But he's gotta look nice first. He's gotta hit up to some shots.
There's really no reason he goes to the mall that I can think of. Other than maybe to use a phone?
I think that's the case. I think he got back, because you see him on the little like boat or whatever, and mm-hmm. then he's suddenly at the mall. I think maybe the mall's near where he got like dropped off.
I am pretty happy about how they laid things out though, because this is where they introduce Gallagher. Gallagher's in the movie.
Slash Gallagher?
Not Slash Gallagher, the comedian Gallagher.
Oh, the racist.
You know who I'm talking about, right? Maybe we'll just call him Gallagher with muscles.
It is not Gallagher.
No, it's not Gallagher.
He looks an awful lot like him.
Yeah.
If only it were Gallagher.
A group of goons. And at this point, we don't really know why they're chasing Ron.
I had no idea why anything was happening.
Oh, yeah.
Point.
I mean, that pretty much goes through most of the movie. But these goons follow Ron into the mall. One of them looks like Gallagher with muscles. And when Steve is on the phone with Zach, or leaving a message, he realizes he's being followed. So he goes into the bathroom. And anybody want to talk about what happens in the bathroom?
Hey, this is really a nice little piece of, you know, a technique that you, the listener, can use if you find yourself in a bad situation in a mall bathroom. All you need is a flaming roll of toilet paper and you're good to go.
That's a good point. That is a great point, Paul. Good safety tip.
Yeah.
And did you guys notice when the goons bust into the bathroom that there's a dude shaving just the top of his head?
Yeah.
It was no one going to notice a bald guy shaving his head.
Yeah, he's like, man, that Gallagher guy looks all right. Let me check that look out. Give me the old shine top.
But basically the goons go like stall to stall trying to find Ron Marcini, and they have like a gun and like a tire iron or something.
There are so many guns in this movie. Why did this one guy have a tire iron?
He drew the short straw.
Did he just fuck up one point? I mean, there's enough guns in this movie to go around. They armed like 8,000 thugs at the very end of this movie. Did they not have one more gun for this guy? Did he shoot himself in the foot the last time? It's like, you can't be trusted with this. You get the tire iron.
This is the first time where we get the sense that there will be no suspense in this movie, though there will be plenty of intended suspense.
I disagree completely. That whole scene with the flaming toilet paper. Basically, they get to the last stall. The tension is through the roof. And Like they bust the door open and a roll of flaming toilet paper just comes out of nowhere and distracts not only all the goons, but everyone watching as well. It worked really well.
It did work really
sure.
well.
Sure.
I did not expect
worked.
A flaming roll of teepee.
The tactic worked great. I want to use it someday. But what I'm saying is, as they were slowly kicking open each stall with some weird uninterested, like the Rockford Files music in the background, at no point was I like, oh no, where's he at? Like, it was just... It was just comically long and drawn out.
Oh, it was so good. And you see,
it was great.
The shot too is like the stall door gets kicked open, and Ron Marchini just throws the flaming toilet paper right at the viewer. It's so good.
It's like a big fireball. Like that, yeah. I don't know how long he was holding that toilet paper, but it's up in flames.
Yep. So, so he gets away. He kind of fights them a little bit, and then we're again cutting to Zach. Because goons show up at Jim's house to kidnap Zach. So this starts a sort of back and forth chase as Steve is running through the mall. And these guys are openly carrying weapons all over the mall, by the way.
So Jay, you know what they say, like father, like son.
Oh, you know what? And that We've phrase, Chris, would you say that at the heart of this film, it's really a story about a father and a son?
It's really a father-son bonding movie.
I would agree.
Bonding over murder and explosions and double crosses. It's
very
just a
touching.
Great, very, very heartwarming film.
Yes. So outside the mall, we see Steve is outside. There's a woman on a car phone. And we have police pull up and a goon
police
that runs outside.
Yeah.
You said police. I think you need to specifically say a policeman.
A policeman.
A policeman said police.
There is gunfire and mayhem going on in a mall. An enclosed space with hundreds of humans in there. And a single police officer shows up.
Yes. And so the goon, or let's see. The police pull up, the goon pulls a gun and shoots the police officer. Then Steve shoots the goon and steals the police car. And then we get into this big car chase. We still don't even know why they're chasing Steve.
Yeah. Hey, at this very moment, I wrote down, why the fuck is any of this happening?
Yeah, you really don't
still
know.
No idea.
You still no
still
idea.
No idea.
To this day, I don't think I know still.
No. And this brings me to a part of the film that I really liked.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mike, you want to talk about the four-wheeler on the bridge?
Yeah, well, you're talking about this cut back and forth between the fight scene there and then this other thing that's going on with Zach. And what's going on with Zach is that little fucker just pops on his four-wheeler, just rides off. But yeah, then he rides around.
Yeah, well, then he gets to the bridge, remember?
He crosses the bridge and everything's fine. Yeah, it's just a bridge.
No, everything is not fine.
It's a normal bridge. The four-wheeler goes across. The car goes across. It's a bridge.
No.
The car does not go across.
No? What are you talking about? What happens? What?
This is, now, when we say bridge, though, it's not like some huge river-spanning thing. It's like 5 feet off the ground over a ditch.
A creek, at best.
A little creek, yeah.
Yeah, and the car...
That's being generous.
Drives into, it does drive off the bridge into the creek.
Yeah.
And the driver screams, and the car just completely explodes.
Yep.
Do not... get into a fender bender in Ron Marchini land.
Hey, now I think there's a very good reason that they don't really explain very well in the movie, but you just kind of have to figure it out by watching how many goddamn grenades there are in this film. Okay? And I can only assume that that car was packed with grenades. So the guy was going to toss a grenade, he had to pull the pin or something, going to throw it at the kid, but he fell off the bridge. Maybe that's why he drove off the bridge. He was distracted.
It could be.
Grenade falls on his lap, explodes, car, boom.
Now, this is the part, okay, so I may have been writing my notes at this point. Does Zach, get into a wreck also? Does he somehow falls off
the
four-wheeler, right?
Well, he just, I think he had an aneurysm.
he just got off. It was
he just
confusing.
Fell off his four-wheeler.
He might. I don't remember exactly.
And then a second car shows up,
to grab him, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good thing we'll send those reinforcements.
So Zach, in Neil Breen taken fashion, does get kidnapped here.
Taken.
And then we taken. Paul, now, when you were watching this, I think you put a message to us on Facebook that said, I hope you guys like pipes.
Indeed.
Was that it?
Indeed.
What happens here with Steve?
Well, we have a chasing slash gunfight at this sort of nondescript series of tubes and pipes and tubes and more pipes and more pipes and more tubes. For a solid 45 minutes to the soundtrack of for 45 minutes. And then what happens at the end of the chase scene? He kind of just gets in a car and leaves again.
Yes.
Later.
So, hey, in between, though, you miss a lot of, like, thug death.
Yeah.
Including my favorite... Husky Boy.
Is that his name? Is that what you named him?
He throws a grenade through one of the pipes, and it rolls behind more pipes, and Husky Boy is looking for him. And here's the grenade fall behind the pipes, so what do? Oh, yeah, I'm going to go look over. Now, it's only like the pipes only waist high. No one's hiding back there. But he goes to check it out.
God.
Yes. Also, was that the guy? He looked like Ron from Parks and Rec, but like chubbier.
Yeah.
Yes.
It also features a lot of Ron Marchini sort of like on top of these tubes, making next to no noise somehow. But they're like not like... They're plastic, basically. I mean, how, like, he's not falling off of these things doesn't make any sense to me.
He is a trained jungle wolf.
Oh, that's yes, right. Lots of
and they're,
tubes
they're
in the
not
jungle.
Known for falling off their tubes.
So, and then, you're right, after he kind of picks them off one by one, he pretty much just gets in the police car and leaves, right?
I mean, I don't even like, think that everyone's yeah. dead. He kills, like, some of them, and then he's like, okay, I've had it with this.
Yeah, that is basically the rest of the movie is Marchini wanders around a warehouse, picks off a couple dudes, then gets bored. Like, it's mostly what happens from now on.
That's Jungle Wolf, baby.
This isn't like the jungle. I'm tired of this.
So, okay, so then the next scene cuts to Terry, who is in the car on the phone outside of the mall when the... policeman got killed. And
the blonde woman.
The blonde woman, which is for the longest time what I had her in my notes as, just the blonde woman, because they don't
say
her
name
enough.
At like the end.
Yeah. She delivers some papers to Adam West's office. This is the introduction
Batman.
to Batman.
Yeah.
Or Carruthers, as Batman likes to be called in this movie. So Steve calls Hartman, who I think is supposed to be a cop. Or an agent in Carruthers' office?
Yeah, yeah. That's the impression I got.
That's really quick. He's in another one of the movies.
He's in the first Jungle Wolf.
His name is different.
Oh, yeah, it's Hartman instead of
Hargrave or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something, yeah.
But are we supposed to get the impression that Parrish works for Carruthers?
I think so.
I think he did. I think what happened was Jungle Wolf 1, I think they say earlier or later on that he did that job in Central America with the ambassador, yeah. And that's what we see from the first Jungle Wolf movie, but none of that actually really makes sense.
No. You know, I take it back. There is a lot of suspense in this movie. Mostly the suspense your brain has in trying to figure out what the fuck is connected yes. to the tissue of all this.
None of it checks out.
Well, next we meet kind of the main bad guy. We meet Patrolli. Yeah, it's his name, Patrolli.
I thought it was Patrolli.
The drug guy, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he's a crime boss who lives in a warehouse. And
no, not just that. He lives in a warehouse at the airport.
Is it at the airport?
I think it's at the airport.
Not a second of it looks like it's San Francisco.
How about this? If it's not at the airport, then the very last scene makes no sense at all.
Yeah, you're right. So anyway, Gallagher comes back empty-handed. And
he's got some explaining to do.
He does.
Shit.
He's just trying to pay the bills. He's got a wife and kid to look after.
He does have kids. Steve has caused Patrolli problems in Central America. So this whole thing links back to Central America. And Gallagher just wants some more men. But the crime boss is pretty nice to Gallagher before shooting him, right?
Well, that's not very nice.
Well, that's not. But he does say, what is he? Doesn't he like offer to take care of his family or something?
Yeah, he says, I'll take care of Maria and the kids.
Maria and the kids.
Yeah.
And then shoots him promptly once in the spleen.
So have we found dead Jim yet, or is that coming up?
That's right now. Go. Take it.
I think it's right now when Jungle Wolf hitchhikes home.
Yeah, that's Jungle Wolf finally gets home to find his son, his beautiful boy. And and he the beautiful boy seems to be missing, and he finds Jim dead.
What the hell?
Hey, at this point, I don't know really anything about this movie, but I do know one thing, is that Jim, his dying wish was to be buried in his yard.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And thankfully, shirtless Steve honors that final wish.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't call the authorities, doesn't call any family members. Ah, this is good enough.
Yeah, it's confusing because he like, my thought, and maybe this is the wrong thought, was like, oh, he buried his friend in the yard. But then in a couple minutes, the house gets attacked by a bunch of fuckers. And do you think he buried all those bodies too? Because
probably.
Because my thought was, if you're not going to call the authorities, you do not want to clean up a bunch of decomposing bodies later. You got to nip that shit in the bud, because that's going to be fucking hard work later.
This is where he's digging the grave. He also is another point where he's remembering his jungle adventure.
Yeah, which, by the way, having seen Forgotten Warrior, having seen the first installment of this franchise, I don't exactly know or understand where Zach comes from, because his wife in the first movie is not white at all.
Oh, that's the we'll get to it during the sex scene of this movie about that then. That must be from that movie.
Yeah.
So we get into a little bit of a Steve Parrish shower scene, cross cut with Jungle Mayhem.
Neil Breen again.
And you just notice this is another Breen type moment. Because that shower head is just blasting him in the face. And it's just an awkward shower scene.
We should probably point out, though, that one of the main differences is that Ron Marchini, if I'm not mistaken, didn't write and direct this film. This is not his complete brainchild.
Yeah.
Correct, yeah. Paul, do you remember what happens next after the shower?
Hell no. This is way more detail than I thought any of us were going to get into.
Yeah, jeez. Is this when the bad guys show up, or is this when...
Well, of course, more bad guys show up. Okay,
yeah. More bad guys are always showing up. But I think I love about this is that there's like five bad guys pouring out of a van, and Steve just annihilates all of them, right?
Oh, yeah.
So what happens? Another van with like 50 more show up.
And these guys, like, to separate them, these dudes have like sleeveless shirts but ski masks. And Steve, of course, kills all these guys before we meet the boss of this level.
This is my favorite introduction. I don't even know if he has a name, but...
I have him as Badass Latino with Small Ponytail.
Yes.
Yeah.
His, perfect name.
I'm looking in the credits here. He's credited as dude you see once and then not again until the very end of the movie. Yep. That's what he's credited as. Yep. So it's an interesting long title.
Yep.
But he just shows up and walks in his, I don't know, what are those, cowboy boots or something, just walks over onto some train track and strikes a pose. And the camera is just showing his feet and then slowly pans up. And he can tell he's a boss because he's got a big-ass revolver with a scope.
It's a giant revolver and a giant scope.
Yeah. So what does he do? He does something in the scene, right? He does a cool fight?
No. Steve hops on a bike and rides away. Again, he's like, I'm tired of this. He's like, I'm tired of killing all these guys. I'm just going to leave now.
He's like, semi-boss is coming in. All right, I'm out. It's just baffling. You don't see this guy until the final fight scene again.
Right.
Like, he doesn't show up. You're like, oh, fuck, that's going to be the guy.
And no, he's in a couple scenes, but he doesn't really do much. He just kind of stands around.
He didn't do anything in that scene.
Well, that's true. So the next scene is where there's like a little bit of story. Like, it kind of ties some things together because Steve meets Carruthers in a graveyard.
Oh, at night.
At night.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of have, like, this is where they kind of, you get the impression Steve worked for him, because he talks about going on one more mission and killing all the bad guys and getting his son. And how, like, Carruthers says the mission in Central America was a failure, and the chopper pilot and the ambassador never made it back. So Jungle Wolf 1, total failure. That's what we find out.
Yep, because we don't need to watch the first one now.
Yeah. No, you don't. If you watch two,
it's just a failure.
You don't need one. He goes in, he breaks into a building, like a compound, and fights the guards.
Well, he tries to sneak past them first, but he's terrible at being sneaky.
Oh, to get papers and shit in the in the agency office. Yes, yes.
He pulls somebody's phone number from a Rolodex.
Yes. So it never really says, though, why Steve suspects Carruthers of anything.
That's Jungle Wolf, baby.
Yeah, he just decides to break into his employer's office and fight the guards. This actually does have, though, one of my favorite hits.
Yeah, my favorite kill.
Okay, tell it, Chris. This was so great.
So he's sneaking around, and finally the guards are onto him, so the guard is chasing Jungle Wolf. And Steve just climbs up a ladder. Is this the same one you're talking about, Jay?
Yep.
On the ladder? So Steve just, like, climbs up this ladder really quickly. And the guard follows him up the ladder. And we cut to the first shot of the guy, the guard climbing to the top of the ladder. And Steve just comes in from off frame and punches him in the face right between the rungs of the ladder. It's so out of nowhere. And I'm pretty sure that guard died because he made a noise, just like everyone else in this movie who died.
And it was a long way down.
Yeah, it was like 50 feet.
You know,
it's
I think
a tall ladder.
Ron Marchini is trying to teach us that sometimes simple is the most effective. He just waited and punched him in the face. Paul, tell us about the naked girl in the shower.
I don't fucking remember. Dude, this thing was like...
All right.
I don't have any idea. The whole thing was a fever dream to me.
All right, I'm just going to occasionally keep asking you stuff, and then you could just keep saying stuff like that. Who remembers in the fever dream experience, who remembers Terry getting out of the shower?
Oh, I remember.
I don't know how Paul could forget. I'm confused about where she is.
She's in the shower.
In her house, I think.
Well, why is he at her house then?
Because he's a fucking creep.
Like, she gets out of the shower. Marchini's chilling. She's naked. They talk for a minute. She's like, oh, wait, let me put some clothes on, I guess. And he's like, cool. She goes to put clothes on. He walks over before she can finish and just handcuffs her to a pipe. Like,
he has to watch her get dressed.
But she expresses the sentiment of wanting to help. Because she wants to help. And he's like, I don't know, fuck you. I roll alone or something. I don't know. I've hurt too
he's
many.
He's a lone wolf.
I've hurt too many already. Jim's dead. So then he fucking leaves to go get his son. And she's there stuck handcuffed.
That's right.
No, she immediately gets out of the handcuffs.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he doesn't know that.
Oh, right. This is where Terry sees Zach, right?
Yeah, he's at the unnamed agency's office.
Yes. They're wheeling him like just through the hallways. There's no trying to hide Zach here.
No.
And
I guess they're all supposed to be on the same page or something.
Yeah, they must be. She sneaks into an unauthorized area and starts hacking on a Commodore 64 computer. What? I'm not exactly sure what information she's trying to get.
The agency kid, it has the goon squad who kidnapped the boy so they can force Jungle Wolf into having to go and kill the drug lord for... It's a whole twisted series of lies.
It's very complex.
It's very complex, Paul. But don't worry, there's a really good fight scene coming up.
Yep.
There's always a really good fight scene coming up.
Chris, why don't you tell us about Zach Attack?
Well, the blonde, what was her name again?
Terry.
Terry goes to, because she knows where Zach is being held, apparently. Mm-hmm. And she goes there, into the room, and she gets into a cat fight. Zach's very first in-person cat fight with the woman who's been drugging Zach. and Zach's early on, and I mean, even at such a young age, he is showing himself to be a man of action. He grabs the syringe that had been used on him previously to drug him, and he stabs that woman in the ass. Knocks her right out.
It's so good. And then pretty much they just escape, Terry and Zach.
Yeah.
That's nothing.
It is peace.
Okay, and so then...
Who's Terry?
Terry's the blonde woman.
Yeah.
I know, but like, who is she supposed to be in relation to Steve Parrish?
She works for that. She's part of the agency.
She works for Carruthers.
Yeah, she's part of that, one of his agents.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
God, this movie.
Pacioli is talking with Carruthers and about how they want more weapons in Central America. And they bring in Hartman, the cop friend or the agent friend of Steve, and the goons beat him up.
Yeah.
And there's this weird little series of scenes where Patronus is trying to do business, and there's like just several little weirdly edited together scenes.
it's like a day in his life of a crime boss.
It is. And then here comes Steve. he assaults the factory, finds Hartman, who's pretty much like beat to a pulp, and goons attack. Hartman is killed. The end of Hartman.
Oh, a sad moment, because wasn't he in the previous movie?
He was.
But, you know, for the as good friends as Hartman and Steve were, Steve made no attempt to untie Hartman.
No. And also,
he's just chilling.
Hartman is planted here so that he can tell Steve that all of this is due to Carruthers. And Steve says, I figured as much.
Not surprised
thanks,
at all.
Thanks for nothing, dude. Peace.
Yeah, there's no like why he suspects him, why he broke into Carruthers' office, what the suspicion is. They really don't go into that much.
So I guess Patronus has like his operations there, his drugs, like loaded up into the back of a motherfucking creep van.
Creep van, it's a motherfucking creep van, creep van.
A motherfucking creep van. Creep van. Motherfucking creep van. And Steve.
Well,
just...
now we gotta post a link below to your creep van video.
So Steve hops in this creep van, throws it in reverse, just runs over the entire drug operation. That I don't know. It's a big plastic tent in the warehouse that I guess they package the drugs or something. I don't know what's going on there, because he just runs over it and drives off. Now there's one thug left alive shooting at the van. And he takes careful aim at the creep van and misses.
Oh.
And then he says, damn.
He's just upset. Real upset.
He's just mildly upset.
He's bummed, man. He's bummed out.
The entire operation is in shambles.
One of the lessons of this movie that I got out of this movie is that if you really want to be a true American hero, you got to make sure to put yourself up against bad guys who miss a lot. Only way you're going to get out of this.
God.
So when he gets to meet Zach again, this is something that occurred to me. It's really not that big a deal. Like,
no.
Steve doesn't really do anything to get Zach back.
Now, this is exactly how I picture Neil Breen writing a father-son relationship.
Yeah, I see exactly that a lot.
You mean in the hotel? When
in the hotel. Plus, there's a really uncomfortable undressing scene that is a little creepy.
Paul, tell us about the uncomfortable undressing scene.
Oh, my God.
Well, they're finally reunited, and, you know, it's supposed to be this sort of playful father and son banter, but when it's a 10-year-old boy, it just doesn't come across as the right kind of playful. Oh. Let's put it that way.
The son says, Dad, tell me about that place again. And Dad says, when we get out of here, I'm going to take you to a place that's real pretty. Son, swimming pools, you know, nothing but good times.
But here's what I don't understand about this scene, or what struck me about this scene. I was expecting this reunion to happen way farther down the line.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So they get back together. I'm like, okay, roll credits. Like, what else do you need to do?
I'm glad they didn't.
I'm like, oh, wait, okay, I get it. He needs to take care of the bad guys. But surely he will get his son out of harm's way. He will take him somewhere else. So that he doesn't have to deal with everything else that's about to happen.
I think Harm needs to get out of Zach's way. The next thing, Terry makes it very clear that she wants a piece of Marcini.
Steve's Marcini.
She wants a piece of the Jungle Wolf. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Jungle Wolf isn't going to let something like this pass without a flashback.
Oh, yeah. Just that
while they're
slow,
fucking.
Awkward embrace.
While
they're
banging.
They're fucking. And not just one. Paul, this is what I was going to ask you about. not just one previous wife, because there's one ex from the first Jungle Wolf, but as you pointed out, I'm pretty sure the other one is the other woman that he was fucking in his mind is from the other movie. Did any of that make
sense?
Well,
yeah, in Forgotten Warrior, he gets married to a woman in Vietnam, yeah, and they have a child. There's a whole nother child. It's a whole thing.
Wow. Jesus. But during his sex flashback, while he's having sex with this beautiful woman right then, he's thinking about two different women.
And he's also thinking about going over a waterfall in a jungle cage.
Was that part of that flashback, too?
Yeah.
God,
I was wondering if that was some kind of euphemism, like the train going into the tunnel. For Steve Parrish, it's going over a waterfall.
To reel this in a little bit, isn't this where Terry asks about Zach's mother too?
Like,
he's
remember.
Not flashing back to Zach's mother. We don't have any, like, I don't remember exactly what was said, but
it flashes back to Jim.
Blows it all off.
It flashes back to Jim.
Flashes back to Jim.
What the hell?
Where did Zach come from?
To be fair, none of us actually watched Jungle Wolf 1, so I'm sure there's something going on in there where Zach is conceived.
Zach's
God.
All right. Zach's immaculate conception.
So after this whole thing, we see the evidence, or we see it come out that Steve stole a very important van.
Mm-hmm.
And the crime boss is very mad because it's got all kinds of money in it. And then, of course, we get back to the standard formula of goons showing up at wherever they're at.
Yeah.
And I don't know how the goons knew that they were at this particular hotel, but somehow they do.
Hotel records, I'm sure.
Yes.
Know, going through the internet, going through those tubes we saw earlier.
Hacking
the
on the Commodore 64s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We do see another little random sex scene when the goons are kicking in doors.
Oh, that's right. They kick down the wrong door.
Oh, yeah.
And they see two people fucking.
And also, there's a bit of tragedy here because...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Someone very important gets shot.
Poor Zach.
No, it's not Zach.
Oh.
Terry gets shot so hard, her shirt flies open.
Well.
Okay, to be fair... Okay, it's the evil woman that was stabbed in the butt by Zach earlier.
She's upset.
And she, now Steve and Zach are in the van driving off, and she takes some careful ass aim, and she doesn't go for Steve. She goes for the woman, for Terry, and yeah, shoots her.
Probably
and
a little revenge.
She knew that her shirt. Yeah, a little revenge there, and she knew that her shirt was going to pop open.
And
yeah,
it is kind of funny that Steve and Zach take off without her.
Yeah, she says
it's like a road
she
trip
gets
now.
Shot, and then says, go, go. And then Steve kisses his two fingers, puts up a peace sign, and then just drives off.
This leads into one of the most amazing parts of the movie.
Oh, it's so good.
Mike, what happens?
Well, they're driving in a van, and there's a chase scene. There's a handful
right.
Another
of,
chase
of
scene.
Cars chasing them. And Jungle Wolf looks down at Jungle Pup and goes, throw those grenades. And he that little pup gets to pull that pin and then throw those grenades at those cars. And that is like the ultimate dream of any child. Like
throwing grenades with dad.
Yeah, like out of a van. Like, holy shit.
What kind of father says, you know, as soon as I get my son back, I'm really going to get him in on the action here. Yeah. He's going to be throwing grenades and blowing up cocaine with me.
And how many goddamn grenades do you keep in your drug van?
Right.
Yeah, it's not even his van,
like,
right?
That moment in particular, where he gives Zach a grenade to throw out of a moving van window. Like, what guarantee do you have that Zach isn't going to fuck that up and blow up the van?
Oh, God. It's really
he
good.
Believes in his son.
Well, I didn't.
Well, okay, so they're evading the bad guys, and we have Carruthers kidnaps Terry now, who was wounded a little bit ago, and so it's kind of like Taken 2 at this point, in a way.
Yeah.
We get another episode of Taken. And then Steve goes to an airport with his son and meets a disabled army buddy who gives him more grenades and big guns.
Yeah.
We're really heading into Act 3 here.
And you know, I have to say, if you don't mind, Jay, I feel like we haven't done a good enough job selling just how ridiculous the music is throughout this entire film. Oh, it is relentless.
It is so... I wouldn't say it detracts from the action scenes because it adds so much. But it's almost like this parallel thing that you need to pay attention to two things. You need to watch the action on screen and the music coming out of the speakers.
I like the fast song that's
doing
like...
its own thing.
Yeah, there are four songs in this. There are literally only four songs. There's a rock song at the beginning.
But here's the weird thing about that. There is original music also throughout the film, where like someone recorded music specifically for this film, sort of like action rock songs, and then the rest of the time they're like, well, what are we gonna do for all the other scenes?
There's one at the beginning, there's one at the beginning, one at the end, and then in the middle is a sandwich sandwiched with like two different moods of backing track, and that's it.
And it's great. 1 2 1. Return fire!
Yeah!
All right, we are almost to the last part of Terry's involvement in this movie, believe it or not.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Okay,
it's real weird how they write her out of the story.
Yeah, because I think I missed it. Because last I remember, she was in that room, and then like Adam West is creepy to her.
Right. They say, like, we've got you. But the next time you see her is the bedpan thing.
That was great.
And she uses that bedpan to escape.
She does. Yeah. She kind of just lures the guard close.
And bam. And then that's it, right?
But she gets away, right?
Yeah, she gets away. And then she's done. Like Carruthers was going to use her as bait because Zach got away, but oh, we've got you now. But Steve just doesn't give a shit.
He doesn't.
He doesn't even like bother to go looking for her. He's got the drugs. He's got the guns and the money.
Well, okay, no. He does try to get her back later.
Now, that's right. He tries to bargain. Yeah.
Not knowing that she's already escaped pretty much.
But not so, dead.
That's right.
Like, spoiler, near the end of the movie, fucking Batman's like, we didn't mean for it to turn out this way with Terry. Like she's dead.
Maybe she died off screen.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I am right, 100%, because I was like, holy shit, I fucking missed something.
Wait,
I
thought died off screen?
Why don't we see it?
Or, no, you didn't miss anything, Mike.
Or he lied to her, was lying to him. One of the two. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. It's
not that
fair.
I expected it to.
Why would the movie start now, though?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, come on.
So, okay, this is the part two where Zach gets another little rockin'
the
moment.
Best line of the movie.
Where some agent, just some dude... walks out of the agency and Zach is in the creep van and calls him over.
Hey, mister.
Hey, mister.
Hey, mister.
We all wrote it down.
My dad says he'll shoot you if you don't deliver a message to Carruthers for us.
So, okay, then Paul, what does it say?
I have no goddamn idea.
He has the guy lean close and Zach writes the message on his forehead.
His forehead.
And takes his gun.
Does anybody know what the message said?
It was a phone number.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And Marcini's just sitting there like a proud papa the whole time in the driver's seat with a pistol on this guy.
Jungle Pup knows what the fuck is up.
That was pretty sweet.
And then, okay, another weird thing. Pacioli walks into Carruthers' office. So you have a Central American drug lord walking into the office of a government agent to talk about what to do about Steve. And then they get the message.
They just don't give a shit anymore.
They don't.
That would be if Donald Trump right now walked into Vladimir Putin's office and just shot the shit.
Pretty much. Pretty much.
That allegedly happened, so.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Yeah, so Terry actually... Well, we do see Terry kill the evil woman.
Oh, that's right.
We do. Shot her. Yeah. So we do see that.
But she doesn't die there.
Steve, for the second time, assaults Petrolli's warehouse. And this is funny, because he pulls up and there's an armed guard outside with a shotgun, and he pretty much just says,
you've got exactly 5 seconds to put the gun down and get out of here.
And he does. He runs.
He does. And he takes off. And then the kid runs around, grabs the shotgun, goes back in the creep van.
Yeah, smart.
It's all played with yakety sacks in the background, and it's really humorous. It's very good.
Okay. And then, stuff starts to get super bonkers here, because... There's this whole thing where Carruthers is like going to leave town. He's packing his money. He's like, screw this, I'm out.
He changes the answering machine message.
Yeah. And Steve and Zach start building dynamite bombs all over this warehouse. And they start dumping all the cocaine on top in these big mounds.
And we get a really badass metal, like, rock theme song going on here, too.
And Steve doesn't have his sleeves anymore on his shirt.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't catch that.
I thought for sure that they were going to be, that they were basically using the cocaine to mask all of the dynamite, to, like, cover it up to get people to get close to it.
They were.
I was wrong.
But what did happen was pretty dope.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
Amazing. So, Petrolli gets out, and Steve is standing there just like a boss. Like,
hey, Batman, see anything that belongs to you?
Or Petrolli says he'll give him Terry if he gives the drugs back.
You give me the dope, I'll give you the girl.
Right, and so that's supposed to be what Steve wants, is Terry.
Yeah, like, why doesn't he take that
deal? I don't
know,
but he just starts blowing up these mountains of cocaine.
No, he doesn't just blow up the mountains. The guy yells at him, he's like, give me the dope, I'll give you the girl, and there's a pause. And fucking Jungle Wolf just raises his arm and blows up the first bomb. It is fucking great, because it goes up in this big cocaine plume, and it's fucking dope. It's good.
Now, I want our listeners to pay careful attention that Mike said the first bomb, because there's five of these little bombs all covered with coke.
Oh, there's like so five many. Of those and about 500 other bombs.
Oh my God.
That's insane.
But they're like five mounds, like explosive mounds of dope to begin with. And every time Petrona says something, boom, there goes another mountain of coke.
Crazy son of a bitch!
Motherfucker!
Come on, get me the dope!
Boom!
Crazy bastard, you chicken shit son of a bitch!
Also, why did Petrolli even, like, offer this deal? Like, what leverage does Marcini really even, or Steve Parrish really even have? He's just standing on top of a building.
Also, by the way, can anyone answer where his fucking kid is at this point?
It's like in a shack.
We're about to get. Is he?
He's in a shack across the street.
Yeah.
That's it?
That's it.
There's gunfire.
Right.
There's explosions.
But Zach is safely across the streets.
No,
out of the line of fire.
Is he?
Well, okay. Well, he's across some sort of vacant lot or something in like a little, I say a shack. That's being too generous. He's like behind a wall with like a tin roof or something.
Yeah. What happens?
My second favorite kill of the movie. And it's not Zach.
No. Zach,
you think Zach's gonna be kidnapped again?
Zach is prepared. He has that shotgun, and he murders a man.
He murders the guy in the suit. It's like Carruthers' right hand man. He just straight up murders the dude. This 10-year-old is like just like ice in his veins, and he doesn't even like hesitate.
No,
the dude just like comes over, opens the door. Boom.
It's cold as ice.
Oh my God.
In my notes, I have, through lots of grenades, gunfire, and trickery, Steve kills them all. And I don't want to undersell that.
Okay, can we talk about this, please? Because this makes zero sense.
Okay.
Like, as we've pointed out, Steve is just standing on top of this roof with zero cover in front of him. And there's about 45 guys inside a bunch of vans. Like, just stand there and shoot him. He's just standing there.
Hey, that dude in the pink polo shirt with the badass mustache and the revolver with the scope, he's got a scope. Just, like, take aim through that little high-powered scope of yours and...
They don't even try. Like, they just all run towards the building at full speed without even trying to take him out first.
Like, they run into the little, like, tunnels and stuff, and you just see fire and explosions come out, like, time after time.
Yeah.
I think
Steve's got it all rigged up.
Yep.
I really think the writer of this, or the director or something, said, how many people did Rambo kill? All right, we got to do like triple that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, Chris, I think you just mentioned the small ponytail guy. He's back again. It's like the Wild West shootout here that you think you're going to get.
Yeah, so like this entire time, like Jungle Wolf is murdering dudes left and right. Like he's got to kill at least like 50 of these guys, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then finally, you think all the thugs are gone. It's just Jungle Wolf and the badass ponytail dude. And it's like Old West. And we're just like, it's a face-off. And Petrolli is kind of like hanging out, sneaking around.
Petrolli is sort of like about to sneak up on Steve and shoot him in the back. He's almost using like one of his top henchmen as a distraction because it looks like it's going to be, you know, a standoff when really Petrolli is behind him the entire time, like sneaking up on him.
And it, through slow motion, Steve is fast enough to pump that shotgun, spin around and shoot Petrolli, and still shoot the other guy before he can raise his pistol and shoot Steve.
This is my favorite part of the movie.
Is it?
You think? Okay, so he's killed like 50 thugs. He's killed the main villain. He's killed the henchman. It's time to pick up Zach and drive home in the creep van, right?
Right.
No. There's like 100 other thugs just scattered throughout this entire complex. So after he's killed all the thugs, he's going to kill them all again because they all just pop out of the woodwork and start shooting at him. Mm-hmm. And Steve just starts letting, I guess he's had a bunch of bombs hidden everywhere else, and he just starts blowing the entire place to shit. Now, what I love about this scene is that when they were filming this, it does not look like they took the usual safety measures, because those explosions were really close to Marcini.
Oh yeah, they are.
Oh, yeah.
He does look worried.
He's running away from this stuff, and he looks scared as shit.
It does.
Yeah, all these explosions are going off like 4 inches from his ass. Yeah.
those explosions are so goddamn close to him.
Yes, that was so great. Now I believe, though he doesn't run, like, just drive off or anything, we more or less just cut out of this again, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's killed enough guys and he decides to leave again.
Yeah.
We cut over to Carruthers, who tries to...
Oh, God, I forgot about this whole fucking thing. Jesus.
He's running across the tarmac to a plane, and this is super dramatic. A helicopter with an unknown... It's probably Zach. Like, flies in.
Jungle Pup is flying that motherfucker.
Yeah, I wondered who was flying that, but yeah.
You don't ever see.
Probably is Zach.
He, you got Jungle Pup in the Air Wolf.
This is the worst part of the movie.
It's the worst part?
Yeah, hell yeah, it's the worst part of the movie.
This is so great.
Paul, why is it the worst part of the movie?
Because, like, okay, Carruthers and Parrish are just sort of like slinking around this... This airport, I don't know what
just
you
like
would
an
call
old
it,
hangar.
Parking lot, basically. Yeah. It's a hangar, yeah. And Carruthers is like kind of getting the best of him. He's like, he's tracking him down and shooting at him and just missing. And Steve's reaction is to just sort of go like, oh, shit. And then like move somewhere else
that's
and what, almost get shot again.
That's what generous
this
in terms
is
of
like
his reaction.
Steve Marchini, or this is Ron Marchini in Terminator mode.
Yeah, this is exactly what I got. I thought, like, he's walking around. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, we've done Rambo. Let's do Terminator now.
Like, the triumphant music is already playing over this whole
thing. But it is so doesn't get pulled off, man. I thought the same thing, Paul. It's because Carruthers is, like, running around, and he's kind of whining, and he's running spot to spot. And Marchini's slowly walking, and he's supposed to be, like, you know, steel-faced and just, you know, mad. But it's just so unbelievable that he's not getting shot. And he's slow. All he has to do, if he wants to catch Carruthers, is just run up to him. Real quick.
He's 5 feet like, away, and you've got a shotgun.
There is a moment. This actually happens in the movie. There is a moment where Carruthers shoots at Steve, misses by a hair, and all Steve does is look in a different direction and walk away.
The scene is supposed to look super cool, but all it comes off is that Steve has become some sort of brain dead killing machine, like a robot that can't move.
It's so terrible.
It is. Oh, it was not as cool. I didn't think it was as cool as it was. I could tell it was supposed to be cool, but I did not find it cool.
It was not cool. Not
so okay, eventually, of course, they come face to face, and Carruthers tries everything. He offers him money.
Carruthers says, hey, you can have whatever you want, and Steve kind of like lowers his guard for a second, almost as if to say, well, maybe I'll kind of think about this. And as soon as he drops his guard, Carruthers tries to shoot him, but of course Steve is way too
quick.
Oh yeah,
Steve pumps 9 combat shotgun rounds into Carruthers, and like the way he angles the gun, he clearly shoots Carruthers and then follows his trajectory down to the ground, still firing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Adam West is dead.
He is very dead.
No question. They don't show the body, but yeah, probably for good reason, because there's. It's just hamburger at
yeah,
this point.
Yeah, there's not going to be any burial there. It's just going to be somebody with a hose, like, washing him off the tarmac. And to end the film, just a freeze frame on Steve's face, and you hear the voiceover.
You made it, Dad. You made it.
Yeah. I'm finally home.
Credits.
Rating time.
Okay, I don't even know where to start here. How about we start with Paul?
What's the rating system?
Yeah, the rating system. Murderous children. An ode to Zack Attack.
I really wish that you wouldn't start with me, but I'm going to accept my fate.
Well, I figured since you didn't say much and this was a fever dream, you're probably going to be low. And I'm hoping it's going to climb.
You know, no, it's. I'm not going to rate this low because I enjoyed it. I didn't understand any of it. None of it makes sense. It's a cluster. It's a total fever dream. But at the end of it, I'm like, yeah, that was pretty good. So, okay, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to rate this a 65 question mark. Can I do that?
Sure. Not really sure about it.
A 65 with a question mark.
Okay, okay. Mike.
Well, I know when I first watched it the first time, I was messaging you guys a little bit. I was a little hard on the movie. I may have been slightly inebriated.
Yeah, I was too the first time I watched this.
So I've rewatched it since, obviously, and very much enjoyed it much more than I did in that first viewing, because it's confusing. And so if you're drunk when you start it, like, shit, dude. Shit. But I did enjoy it. I thought there was some good stuff. It lags sometimes, and sometimes stuff doesn't play out as entertaining as you would hope it would be. But I'm basically with Paul here. I'm going to give it a 66 murderous children.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Chris.
You know, I think, I'm pretty much in agreement with those guys that it was just, none of it made sense. And it was just, I was a little hard on it in my notes and thinking like I was going to give it not a low score, but kind of a mediocre score. But watching it through a second time and kind of reliving some favorite moments and then the discussion we've had throughout the episode, I think I really enjoyed the hell out of this movie. I'm going to give it a
nice.
I'm going to give it 75 murderous children.
75, nice.
Beautiful.
Nice. 75. Okay, I did really enjoy this movie. I laughed a lot the first time through. And again, like I said, I had been drinking a little bit.
We had different drunk experiences.
We definitely did. I think the thing that got me was that punch at the top of the ladder. And just the kid with the grenades. I'm like, this is insane. I'm watching this. I'm like, I have to pick this. This is crazy. Yeah. So, you know, it's a rare one. I don't think we said this yet, but this movie did not even get a DVD release. This is only on VHS, right, where you can find it, like on eBay or whatever, and the one place on YouTube that we've linked it to. So this is kind of a rare one, and I'm glad I found it. And I had a really good time with it both times. So I'm going to rate it pretty high. I'm going to go 83 murderous children.
Nice.
Beautiful.
I really did have a good time with it. Thank you, Mr. Marcini.
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
You guys like superheroes, right? I think most of us have read comic books growing up.
Sure.
Or, you know, sure. well into adulthood. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the current slate of Marvel movies, but, you know, some of them are pretty good, and I think they're generally enjoyable. So I would like to, I really wanted to pick a Marvel movie, a Marvel superhero movie.
Oh, no. Oh, if this is what I fucking think it is.
Oh, I think it is.
Would be so much fun to watch. And as far as I know, this movie was never actually released.
Oh, fuck.
But we're going to watch going to watch the Roger Corman Fantastic Four.
Nice.
Oh, shit.
Awesome.
I've been wanting to see this one for a while.
Awesome. Where can we see it?
I've got a, it's on YouTube. I found one YouTube link that looks pretty good. So we're going to go with that one.
Great.
Yep. All right.
I'm down for that. We'll get all stretchy and rock hard.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydie? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out. Touch them. They're touching themselves. And they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!